The leaders of the Arab world are meeting in Baghdad, or at least some of them are there. Only 10 out of 22 have actually showed up. It's the first time the Arab League summit has been in Iraq since Saddam Hussein's time. It's a challenge for the security and political stability in Iraq. But at the meeting, Syria is really the issue on the table. The United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon called on members to encourage political freedom across the Middle East.
As leaders of this Arab region, you have the power to make sure all your people realize their legitimate aspirations. You have the power to deliver the economic growth and national renewal that will turn the current awakening into a full blossoming for the people of Arab world. I urge you today and in the coming month and the years to come to put your people first. It will be your legacy and it will reverberate down the generations.
The focus quickly centered on Syria, Iraq's neighbor. And Iraq's position on the instability in Syria is less clear than some of the other members of the Arab League. Zuhair al-Nahi, who is a spokesperson for the Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's Dawa party. Earlier, he told our partner, the BBC, that Iraq was keen to promote regional stability, but he stopped short of calling for any concrete action against the regime of Bashar al-Assad.
Iraq supports peaceful relations with all neighboring countries, indeed with all countries of the world, and it will do its best to solve any regional problems without taking sides and by realizing the rights of all, particularly the Syrian people.
It's the report from Baghdad there, but on the ground in Syria, the instability continues. Hugh Sykes is a reporter for our partner, the BBC. He knows Baghdad very well, but this morning we find him very close to the Syrian border. Hugh Sykes, I can't imagine anyone is paying much attention to the Arab League summit in Baghdad from where you are.
Only indirectly, as it affects Syria. It is essentially important to Turkey that the Syria problem, which is a bit of an understatement of what it is there, is solved, because there are 17,000 Syrian refugees already in Turkey. There's been talk from Turkish politicians about setting up a buffer zone inside Syria in order to contain the refugee problem, but that, of course, would involve invading Syria, which would create all sorts of new problems. So Turkey cares deeply about its southern neighbor.
Who are you speaking with there? The refugee flow has been continuous over the last year. It ebbs and flows, and the last few weeks have been particularly critical. Who are you talking with?
I've been to two refugee camps in the past 2 days, one which is full of people who are refugees from Halab, Aleppo, which is on the signposts here in Turkey, just 90 kilometers south of that refugee camp, which is about 55 miles, and another refugee camp very close to the Syrian border. And the message from both of them, from the refugees in both of those places, very, very clear. We want regime change. Nothing else will do. This man has shown himself to be a mass murderer, President Bashar al-Assad. We cannot do business with him. We cannot negotiate with him. He says he's going to have ceasefires. There are no ceasefires. He says he's going to accept a peace plan several months ago. He does nothing but go on shooting mostly unarmed civilians and then complaining that terrorists are shooting at him. Well, hey, we approve of self-defense, and it's a completely asymmetric battle in Syria. The massed armed forces, mostly armed by Russia and helped along by Iran, against initially totally peaceful protesters. And of course that was going to develop in some armed conflict. So these refugees say, the only way to solve this problem, and two people at both ends of the age spectrum, one about 60 years old and two more aged about 30, said to me very, very clearly at the refugee camp right down by the border today, the only option now is intervention by the West, by the United Nations, by NATO, by whoever. And I said, well, won't that just make things worse? And they said, no, not intervening will make things worse now, because he's targeting children.
Hugh Sykes, a reporter for our partner in the BBC, is very near the Syrian border in Turkey. And I've been listening to some of your dispatches that you've sent to our partner, the BBC. We've aired actually one or two on our program this morning as well. And, you know, there is a sense of confidence in some of the voices of these refugees. I recall one man you spoke with who insisted that Bashar al-Assad, even though he is the president, is the leader of Syria, has actually no power. There's no intrinsic loyalty to Bashar al-Assad right now, which seemed an extraordinary statement.
incredibly important point, that, because there is the very powerful state machine of the Alawite family, which is essentially what Bashar al-Assad's supporters belong to. But he relies on very large numbers of essentially Sunni Muslim soldiers. Not all the armed forces by any means in Syria are followers of the Alawite sect. And one of the refugees told me this morning the only reason there isn't mass mutiny amongst the Sunni rank and file of the Syrian armed forces is that they're terrified of what would happen to their families if they did that. They always know that there's a kind of Ba'athist, Saddamist threat against individual males. If you do not stay in line, we will go and take it out on your family, just as Saddam Hussein did.
Well, speaking of Saddam Hussein, think for a moment about the situation in Baghdad. I know you're not reporting on the Arab League summit, but it seems to me that what's come out of there is a sign, once again, that the city of Baghdad, it's going to be a very long time before it takes a major place in the Arab world since the fall of Saddam Hussein. How important do you think this milestone is of this foreshortened summit?
It's incredibly important symbolically. Well, I was in Baghdad just a couple of months ago, and though it's much, much better than it used to be years ago during the really bad times, it's still a city under an extraordinary kind of security blanket. There are checkpoints all over the place. The traffic is snarled up because of the checkpoints. There are still high security walls. There's still the green zone with the American and British embassies inside it. It's not a normal place. And now we have these explosions, which I'm almost certain are being led off by former members of the Saddam regime, in cahoots with members of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, who really don't like having a Shia government there and want to destabilize the whole country. And behind it all, many people here think, is Saudi Arabia, who really don't like what's happened in Iraq, who are really unhappy with the consequences of the American-British invasion in 2003, which has replaced a secular Sunni dictatorship, Saddam Hussein, with a religious Shia, some say already, emerging dictatorship under Nouri al-Maliki.
Which has raised the profile of Iran, certainly in the region. Hugh Sykes, a reporter for our partner, the BBC, reporting very close to the Syrian border in Turkey. Thanks, Hugh.
Thank you, John. Lovely to talk to you again.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.